staggering the elections, one or the other. So let's choose one-third elected every year or half elected 2 years in a row with the third year off. Those are the only two possible ways to stagger elections with a three-year term.
Well, maybe we need to change the number of years in the term.
Why would we do that?
To have the election as frequently.
It's crazy. It's simple. You'd either elect a third at a time or half at a time. What's complicated?
Okay, David.
Hi, David Green, KPFA. I would encourage the board to consider the two elections held every 3 years, electing half the board. That gives you, that maximizes the representation, assuming that we are using the choice voting system.
I can't hear you.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Wait, folks. Let David say what he wants.
Carol was suggesting considering.
No, David, say what you think we should.
I would encourage the board to consider the two elections held every 3 years, so that you have 1 year off, so that you're staggering the board, you're electing half the board at a time. That gives you the maximum representation during the election.
And what is two elections every 3 years?
Meaning that you would elect half the board 1 year, you would elect half the board the next year, the third year you would have no election as people continue their 3 year term. Then in the fourth year, you would then re-elect half the board, that first cohort who had finished their 3 year term.
Explain why, because that's important.
Explaining why?
Why having a larger election is
better. So, under the choice voting system, the more people that you're electing, if you're electing 10 people, that means that one-tenth, more or less, of the voters can stand behind one candidate and elect that person. If you're electing one-third of the board, then that means that of a 20-member board, you have approximately seven or six people being elected each time. So you need a larger number of people. You need one-sixth of the voters to stand behind a candidate. So your diversity goes deeper as you have more candidates up for election.
Right.
Okay. Okay. I think the concern, I think if I could, Janice, I think the concern that Janice has, and another concern I have, is, you know, that there will be out of every 3 year, within any given 3 year period, two times there will be an election cycle. And that's the concern, right? Is that at least 2 years in a row, people are going to be tied up in election processes. The other way you could do it is you could change the term. You could have a four-year term, and then every 2 years elect half. That's one way you could do it.
This is predicated on adopting their system of identifying people in groups.
No,
it's not. No, it has nothing to do with that. It has nothing to do with that system.
Diversity?
It has nothing to do with that. Think of how the Senate gets elected. Right? There's no diversity requirements in the United States Senate. Right? And it's a staggered election, right? A third of the Senate is elected every 6 years.
Every 2 years.
2 years.
Sir.
The Senate? Two years. Right. And you serve a 6 year term.
Right. The learning curve on elections is pretty fast, meaning that the first year we had a lot of effort. The second year it was much easier. So I don't think that having elections, two elections every 3 years, would be an extremely onerous task. And furthermore, having the elections does provide a very strong outreach function for the stations and really revitalizes discussion about the elections or about the stations' management. Okay. So they serve a positive function.
I'm thinking about the money.
Okay, I have to believe you.
What about the money, the cost of doing this?
The cost can be compiled with the cost of other mailings that the station is doing. If the station is sending out programmers, members, or others, then you can combine that with election. The two main costs are the printing of the election materials and the mailing. And
I thought there were more costs than that involved with an election.
No.
Because
no.
I thought we were talking about $10,000 for an election.
It costs KPFA $10,000, and that was about $6,000 in printing and $4,000.
The cost is going to vary depending on how many members you have. If you had 100 members, it would be a lot cheaper than if you have 100,000 members.
It's unclear to me why having it split in half instead of split into a third, how are you going to increase diversity or anything?
Can I talk about
Harold? Participation.
At KPFA, we've been using a voting methodology called proportional representation. What that does is, instead of being a winner-take-all system, where if there were 10 seats and each voter has 10 votes and 50% of them could elect everybody, that's the normal way you elect boards. It's changed. It's a single vote. If there are 10 seats, I get one vote. And one-tenth of the voters, plus one, can fill a seat. It doesn't take 50%. The advantage of doing that is that smaller groups of people who have a common interest can gain seats on the board. It's not the same people electing all of the seats, but a smaller group. So it works very well, according to the Fair Vote people, for spreading things out around racial and ethnic minorities or other interest groups. And it also, interestingly enough, works to spread things out geographically. At KPFA, what happened was our election resulted in a geographically diverse board as well as a result of this voting mechanism.
Is this impossible to do with having elections every 2 years with
no.
half the board running?
No, but you get more diversity the more seats there are. Because if there are 10 seats open, it takes one-tenth of the votes plus one to get elected. If there are 6 seats open, it takes one-sixth of the board plus one. If there are 3 votes, it takes a larger percentage of the voters to get elected.
Okay, folks, I'm no math whiz, in case you haven't noticed this already. No one's argued against staggered elections. Right? That's the major principle here, is that not everybody has voted on one. And we can just fine-tune this about what, you know, within a three-year period, what works to maximize the pool of people running, and that will translate into the diversity on the board, and to also have it staggered. You know, so can we figure out the details later on this one?
Okay. I don't want to take my word for it. There's only one way to do that.
Okay. I take your word for it. I'm saying I have no basis to challenge it, but maybe somebody has another configuration. I don't know.
With a three-year term, there are only two ways to stagger.
Well, can we have the option of saying with a four-year term and elections every 2 years?
No, you have to decide how long the term is.
I said a four-year term and elections every 2 years.
Do you want to do that to anybody?
In our survey of candidates, we were not finding people that would be really willing to serve 4 year terms.
Okay.
2 years possible, 3 years.
Okay, if you
possible.
Had 2 year term, then what would be elections
have
every 2 years? Then everybody would run.
You'd have to elect half every year.
That's what KPFA is doing right now, that we have 2 year terms, elections every year, electing half every year.
Okay, let me ask my question this way. Does anyone in here, in this room, have any problem with what I perceive as a lot of complexity with those fractions and things that Carolyn just named? I'm serious. If we're sitting here and we're living it, how is the listenership going to understand?
Let me just say something. That sometimes when you go over and over and over these things, like in this kind of conversation, it gets more complex than the reality of how these things play out. So I think it's becoming more complex in this conversation than it might actually be in the real world of running an election.
Choice voting had been used for the New York community school boards to successfully elect
that they just got rid of.
But that was a political decision because they were perhaps working too well. But they were used successfully by communities. They were used by communities of color who ran slates and successfully elected representatives of color and got that representation because they had the proportionality. Choice voting has been adopted in most new democracies, any emerging democracy. South Africa, when they had to develop a new government in 94.
I don't have to be convinced about that. I want that. I'm just talking about the frequency of elections. That's all I'm talking about.
You would express concern about the fractions, and I just want to explain that this is an established 100-year-old system that has been used repeatedly and will work.
Okay, so can we adopt this then?
All right.
May I point something out to you?
No. Okay. If we have agreement, then we don't have to discuss it anymore.
That's it has to do with the length of the terms, ma'am. There's a conflict between the length of the term at the local station board and at the national board.
They're both 3 years.
If you have to wait a year on the mm-hmm. local board before you can elevate to the national board, then you cannot serve 2 3-year terms.
Yeah, well,
because good luck.
Okay, we're not on that item just yet, but so thank you for pointing it out. Okay, where are we? Did we agree then on half of the board elected every 2 years? I mean 2 years in a row.
That's how we're going to stagger.
Okay,
yes.
That's how to stagger it.
Yep.
Unless somebody does some mathematical wizardry. Okay, so then the next point is the term of the, point C. Term of a delegate shall be 3 years. Now, how is that different from point A?
There's no difference.
Okay, so maybe we don't have to repeat that. So then a director may serve 2 consecutive 3-year terms. No problems with that?
Yeah, we're anybody who's about still delegates, not directors.
Oops,
that's a typo.
That's a typo.
Yeah.
Delegate. Okay, a delegate shall not be eligible for further services as a director, until 1 year has elapsed after the termination of the delegate's second consecutive 3. You can serve 1 3-year and another 3 years, and take a year off, and then you can be elected again. Okay, any problems with that? No. What's D then?
Well, that's a policy issue. We don't really have to deal with that now.
Okay, Section 5. What?
In the translation from the KPFA draft to Rob's draft, the footnotes, actually a lot of the footnotes are not being looked at this weekend, and they should be as far as the first implementation. But the specific one now is about grandparenting, whether that's going to be included in the first round of elections.
Grandparenting.
Okay, can... Okay, that should come up now, I guess. Is there a proposal on grandparenting?
Grandfathering.
Well, it's been called grandfathering. I think there's an attempt
to be politically
to take the sexism out of the language. Grandparenting.
All right, I have a proposal.
I caught grand animal.
Of the listener sponsor elected seats, not the staff seats, up to half could, in the first implementation of these bylaws, be grandparented for 1 year. The reason for that is continuity. The reason for that is currently we have an elected board at KPFA with 8 members on it whose terms do not expire for another year. The reason for that is, I have another reason for that, and it is quite controversial, and that is that I don't think WPFW has, over the past year, done enough public affairs programming to develop an audience that we can be totally confident is supportive of the mission of Pacifica. And I think that the current LAB at PFW is very supportive, and we ought to give them another year to keep transitioning that station. They haven't been able to do as much as KPFT and KPFK have. So I would like to give a boost to the PFW station by keeping half of their LAB in for another year if they choose to remain. I have also mixed feelings about it because... I know that the listeners in Houston, actually the lab here in Houston has already taken a vow not to grandparent. There would be nothing compelling them to do it. They wouldn't have to, so they could keep their promise to their listeners. But I know that it's very controversial in New York and Los Angeles, and I'm not 100% wedded to this proposal, but I feel it's important to make.
Okay. Well,
in New York, the majority of the lab is in support of grandparenting as a way to towards takeovers to guarantee that people who are sitting there there'll be some kind of continuity.
George,
it seems to me this grandfathering flies in the face of our settlement agreement.
How so?
Folks, because let him say his piece.
You know, we all signed documents saying that we were going to have new elections for new boards. And we're saying, well, yeah, but not really. We're going to grandfather the old folks in. And that flies in the face of the spirit of the document. And you know that.
I guess I did not.
When you think about it,
Rob, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'd like to weigh in with what George has to say. I absolutely don't agree with Carol. I don't think anybody here needs to be meddling in the affairs of another station or signal area.
Here, here.
Actually, it was the local board that asked me to do that.
Oh,
they're not here.
Statement stands.
Okay, folks. David?
Well, I think James was...
No, go ahead.
I would speak in support of grandparenting. I think one of the things that I've observed in over the years in nonprofit organizations, particularly when they go through transition, is a lack of continuity. And regardless of what one might think of the individuals on any given specific board or the politics and so forth of an area and so forth, these are the people that have been doing a lot of the work. Although the labs have not been empowered to do a whole lot of the actual governance type of work, they've been working on these issues. And they're familiar with the processes. They've helped develop it. I think it would be good to have some continuity by having some overlap from the current existing boards to the next boards.
James? If I could just call myself for a second. I actually do not support the grandparenting provision. I think that anybody who's currently on a local board should have the right to run.
Right.
But that there shouldn't be built into this a guarantee that X number of them will be reseated. And my hunch, and obviously I don't have a crystal ball here and nobody knows for sure how this is all going to play out, my hunch is that a good portion, if not most, of the people who are presently on local boards who run will be voted in again. I think there will be a de facto grandfathering or grandparenting here because I think most... of the people who end up voting will be concerned about continuity and continuing some overlap of who was on there before and, you know, institutional memory and all that. I don't think we have to actually build it into the system. That's my thing. Now, I see four people up here.
We're one
person. Okay. Very short.
What LA came up with in terms of the unity proposal and so forth was to set aside X number of seats for grandparented in, however, that they would also be on the ballot to be elected. So among, well, if we have, let's say, 20 people on the lab, that only whatever your number is, your magic number, 6 or 8, people would get grandparented in. So everybody that votes picks 6 or 8 out of the members of the lab. So they are still up for a form of election. There is an electoral component in there. I don't think that anyone wants anyone on the new station boards that do not go through some process of election from the membership. But setting aside X number of seats to be grandparented in for continuity at least guarantees that whatever that magic number is, but that they would be also on the ballot in a separate section. Do you want to add anything other than...
Paul Surabel from WBAI listening area. A couple of points. Am I on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you're on.
I wanted to respond to what George raised as far as that this is really not in keeping with the settlement agreement. Well, actually, it's very much in keeping with the settlement agreement because the KPFA elections guidelines, the election model, which is what we are supposed to be starting from, include a provision for grandfathering. And this is prior to the bylaws revision process. So this would be perfectly consistent with KPFA. I'm just speaking personally, not our committee really hasn't taken a position on this. But personally, I think grandfathering would be a very good provision in the sense of, you know, just making an assurance that we have continuity. And that in those, you know, listening areas where there may be, you know, more turmoil and instability than others, that we can be sure that at least part of the board, you know, will be, you know, strongly in favor of the mission. And under the proposal, we would have eight people would have the option of being grandfathering. So most likely, you know, at most you'd get maybe a third of the new lab would be grandfathered members.
Okay, Miguel and Ruby, and that's it.
Miguel Maldonado from WBAI. I just want to say that just for the spirit of the transformation that we are living on Pacifica, that I think that the people voluntarily should pull their position for running and really trying to prove, and, you know, I don't think that I see people who are listeners that they don't miss a meeting for the lab, and I see so many lab members who miss so many meetings on the lab, and I think that most of the listeners, especially in the period that we are living, all the struggle that we went through, it proved that there were so many listeners who have the knowledge and the experience to serve in the lab and provide some continuity in the lab, because they've been involved in the process for long, long, long time. And I think that just in my particular experience, I would be happy to say I was selected by, you know, by the people. I was not appointed here. So this is the new move. This is the new style. I'm with it. And I think that the people voluntarily should say, no, I want to put my position for running. And I think that's something that we should encourage it.
Okay, folks, I'm not...
Yeah. My name is Karabi Rayford, Washington, D.C., WPFW. I strongly support the grandfathering of the lab. If it can be that maybe different network stations don't grandfather, D.C., it really needs to. I just was on a call today for half an hour from a programmer, progressive programmer, who is having so many problems because of the current administration, and he doesn't have any way to address this. And one of the things the local advisory board at WPFW does is really, there's so many issues and there's so many problems that are presently there, and that the people who have been on the lab for a while are exhausted, they're burnt out, but if they are willing to grandfather, then it would be a miracle of God to allow them to do it. Because there's so many issues currently at the station there that are not being resolved. A longtime programmer went on the air just on Wednesday and blasted the lab. And that kind of energy is still there. So the lab doesn't do anything. They were lazy. They were strangers. That we don't contribute. And this is a serious issue. So these programmers have access to the airways. Their emails going out and their community forums. So there's a need, at least in Washington, D.C., for continuity of work if you want the work to be continued, to grandfather that particular lab.
Okay, let me just whatever happens on the grandfathering thing, that has to stop. That really has to stop.
The emailing and the
garbage has to stop.
Yeah, good luck.
I don't know. Tony was around. I don't know if he's in the room now, but we need to talk to him. He's here this weekend. That's got to be brought under control. And people should not be getting on the air slamming the labs, you know. Go to a meeting and raise your concerns, but don't. Anyway,
quick question. Stacey Davis, KPFT, lab member. How would we decide who gets grandfathered?
The question was how would it be decided? I'm assuming that the people who are presently on the lab would decide among themselves if they want to continue serving. Then those names would be part of one section of the ballot. That's one way to do it, anyway. That if there were, I'm just making up numbers now, if there were 10 people from the present lab who would like to be grandfathered in, and there were 8 seats for them, you know, those names would be up there, and 8 of them would, or for sure, of that 10, at least 8 would be elected. That's certainly one way to do it. But we can figure out the details. Carol?
I understand that 2 labs have taken pledges. The KPFT lab has pledged no grandfathering. The KPFK lab, I understand, the new members who came on this summer pledged that they would not be subject to grandfathering. Is that true?
Yeah.
Just the new members. The bylaws would not change those resolutions of those labs. You adopted resolutions. They are binding on you, I think. But so we would be talking about KPFA, WPFW, and WBAI, really.
Okay, can we get a sense of this body?
Please.
Okay, So with the clarification of where this would be practical, you know, where it would be happening.
Yes or no in grandfather?
Yeah, yes or no in grandfather. In other words, that it wouldn't really affect K or T.
Oh,
okay.
It's okay. It's under.
Okay. All those who support, all those who.
1 year.
For 1 year? Grandfather is for 1 year, and then they would have to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Their term would expire. It would be a 1 year grandfathering.
For one election.
1 year. That those folks who were grandfathered, if there was a grandfathering clause, those people who were grandfathered in would only be in for 1 year.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know unless
yes.
voted differently.
That's what grandfathering means.
And it would also address this rate, the notion that if people are afraid that there's a takeover, it would prevent that in the first vote. That is the rationale behind it. So you would be satisfied by that limitation.
Okay. All those who support, with one thing that more details need to be hammered out, but support the concept of the kind of grandfathering we're talking about. All those who support that, raise your hand. One, two, three. And all those who oppose that, one, two, three. And all those who are abstaining at this point, one, two. And Jabari's out of the room. So we need some more discussion, not now.
Can we hear why?
Fearless leader, I would suggest we do have discussion now because we should resolve an issue and move on. We've already invested some time in it now. I think we're well into it. To abandon it, we would have to revisit much of the argument we've already engaged. I think we should seek closure on this issue.
Well, I understand, but also we're going to need to take another break. When and how many minutes?
We've got about 4 minutes left.
Let's take a break right now.
Like a
1 or 2 minute break. They just need to.
Don't go anywhere.
Okay, we're just taking a break.
Can we hear what, meanwhile, why people voted against it? I'm just curious. I'm interested. It won't be long enough.
Yeah.
The BI lab, the majority of it, has expressed the desire to have it continue. Except within that context, only if we're going to take over. So 1 year will be fine.
You know, 20 new people all at once.
I can't.
That's what we're concerned.
Yeah.
It's going to be 20
lab.
If we're 20 people all at once, then 20 new people. Many people may have come from the old lab, they may have
talked. That's going to be interesting.
And so forth and so forth. And like the other 10 years down the road, that probably used grandfather to still have the lab for 1 year.
Okay, well, I need 1 more minute Okay, folks, we need to reconvene, although we've lost half the board. Yes. Okay, folks, let's get going again. David suggested that we continue on this.
Just figure out and let's go. I mean, what are we saying if we don't continue on it?
What I was going to suggest is that there's so many other details here that we need to refer to committee or do more brainstorming on that I think with a little more discussion back and forth, we may be able to come up with some formulation on this. That's what I'm saying.
So you're saying set aside something.
That we come back to it later or later next week. Somebody proposes something and we circulate it on the email or something. Okay, folks, I'm sorry, folks. It's obviously it's a very difficult set of issues that we're trying to deal with. It's hard to do it in the best circumstances, but the noise in the room makes it harder. So I would like to suggest that we move on. Either we come back to it later in the weekend or whatever. You know, whenever. Okay, I don't know where our board folks are because the next issue is actually a very big item.
Mm-hmm.
It's the local station board diversity goals and requirements. Mm-hmm. And we do need, could somebody do me a favor and just look out there and see if any of the board people are there and Get them in. Get them in. They're not there. They're probably
Les fausses des ans.
Say that in the mic.
We need to get going though on this diversity stuff.
I say we vote in favor of diversity.
Somebody will say we need to discuss it.
Well, there was a time.
That's going to be amazing.
Okay, the recommendation.
You didn't see Jabari or James.
You don't
see Jabari. Jabari wasn't there.
Okay. I'm confused about how to proceed here because this is such a big issue, and some of our board members aren't here.
Near the collection, stuck it on a lemon.
All right, let's go. Let's just start the discussion. The recommendation is, in order to fulfill the foundation's purposes and principles, as set forth, blah blah blah, the delegates elected to each local station board shall include at least 50% people of color and at least 50% women. Each local station board, in designating an electoral mechanism, in designing an electoral mechanism, shall also strive to achieve diversity in terms of disenfranchisement based on race, nationality, immigrant status, class, disability, sexual orientation, and age. In order to achieve these goals, it is recommended that local station boards implement proportional representation voting methods in the conduct of the local station board elections. Okay, everybody, it's pretty clear. I'm not saying, does everybody agree? Does everybody understand what's put forth here? Okay, comments. Well, I'd like to say something. I support the requirements, 50% people of color and 50% women at least. I do have a problem in the second sentence. Each station board in designing an electoral mechanism. I think we need a unified electoral mechanism around this system. I do not think each local board should design its own electoral mechanism.
You're going to hear from people who have...
I'll just strike that and put in a shall.
Shall also strike.
Yeah, so I my recommendation would be shall.
Okay.
To take that phrase out. Comments? Carol and then Ray.
My comment is that the law requires that we specify how the local station board members are selected. I can read the section of the law to you. It's we have to abide by it. It says California Corporations Code, which governs Pacifica, says a corporation may provide in its bylaws for delegates having some of the authority of members. That's what we're doing. Our delegates are electing our directors, so they have the authority of members. Where delegates are provided for, the bylaws shall set forth the delegates' term of office, any reasonable method of delegate selection and removal, and any reasonable method of calling meetings and noticing. The bylaws shall set forth how they will be selected and removed. It's a requirement of the law. So we can't say that the local boards will design their own. We have to put it in the bylaws how they will be selected. So I don't think we can even debate that point. But I do think some strong language about each local station board shall strive to achieve diversity in terms of all these other categories through an outreach to recruit candidates, setting up a candidate recruitment committee somewhere. We can put that in the bylaws and so forth. That's what I think.
Okay, Ray.
You're saying that is a point of law?
Yes.
And that setting it cannot be that it would allow the labs to do it. It would have to the board itself has to decide on the proportions and numbers.
The bylaws shall set forth the delegate's terms and any reasonable method for the delegate's selection and removal.
What does reasonable mean now?
What does that mean is the bylaws have to set forth a reasonable method for selecting your delegates. You have to put it in the bylaws. You can't leave it out of the bylaws.
And reasonable would not, leaving it to the local board to do fine details within the
well-defined,
would not be considered reasonable.
No, Ray, it has to be. The bylaws have to state how the delegates are selected. That's the law.
Okay. That she just read it 2 or 3 times, so I think it's pretty clear. I don't know. Let me just say one thing. We also know that, and I'm not discounting what you read here, but we also know that lawyers read the same document and interpret them differently, right?
That's not open to cut. Right, the word shall is not ambiguous. Shall means you shall put it in your bylaws, and it has to be reasonable.
Okay, so are there other comments then on this recommendation? The so far, the recommendation is 50% people of color, 50% women, at least 50% people of color, 50% women, that also the local station boards will strive to achieve diversity in a number of other categories, and also add some language about outreach to recruit candidates from these disenfranchised groups. And that also the recommendation is, well, again, this then would not be a recommendation that to the local station boards to implement proportional voting. That would be
That was the other thing I wanted to comment about.
Yeah.
Under the governing law of California, you can conduct your board elections the normal way, which I tried to explain is if you've got 10 seats open, everybody gets 10 votes and votes for every seat. That's the normal way boards get elected. Or, under California law, you can do what's called, it's authorized specifically in the California code that you can do what's commonly known as bullet voting, cumulative voting. If there are 10 seats open, I can put all 10 of my votes on candidate A and therefore help to get that candidate elected. That works to give minorities seats on boards. The California Corporations Code does not specifically reference proportional representation. It doesn't prohibit it, but it doesn't specifically authorize it. It does specifically authorize cumulative voting. The purpose of those two things is the same. My view is that we need a legal opinion on whether or not proportional representation is permissible under California law, because it's not referenced in the statute. The statute does say that if you want to use cumulative voting, you have to authorize it in your bylaws. If you don't authorize it in your bylaws, then you can't use it.
Can I ask what is the difference between cumulative voting and proportional representation?
Yes, I can explain the two. David might do a better job, though.
I'll try.
Yeah, sit down.
With cumulative voting, you are given a number of votes that's equal to however many seats are being elected. So if you have 5 people being elected, you're given 5 votes, and you can allocate those votes however you choose. You can put all 5 of your votes, the full weight of 5 votes, on one person. You can put 2 votes on one person, 3 votes on another person. You can put 1 vote on all 5 people. Cumulative voting works because it does allow minority groups, minority constituencies, to put their full weight behind a candidate and get that candidate elected. Cumulative voting has differences with proportional representation because there's some ambiguity in the voter's mind. Well, should I put 3 votes on? Should I put 2 votes on? Should I put 5 votes on this
person? In which one?
In cumulative voting. It's what we call a semi-proportional system. Proportional representation, you simply say, this is my first choice candidate. this is my second choice, this is my third choice. It's unambiguous. You're saying, I want this person above all others. When you're voting with cumulative voting, the question for you is, well, do I put 5 votes on this person or do I put 2 votes? How strongly do I indicate that support? That's unclear, and cumulative voting was developed largely when you had just 2 distinct groups that were vying for representation on a board. And it was very clear, unambiguous, if you either support this candidate or you support that, and it worked to elect both parties. When you have a very fraction...
A large number doesn't work as well?
Proportional representation, choice voting is the preferred method.
You want to explain how it works?
Choice voting works for the voter. It's very simple. You're given a slate, a list of candidates, and you simply rank the candidates in your order of preference, saying that this is the person I most want to have elected. Number 2 would be the person, if my first choice were defeated or were not running or had already been elected, my second choice would be this person. But the idea is that you as a voter have 1 vote.
Is that different from proportional?
This is choice voting proportional representation.
So it's not a third option. There are just 2 things.
We're talking about 2 options. We're talking about cumulative voting or proportional representation.
And choice is synonymous with proportional.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the recommendation is that we would have proportional representation, but Carol is suggesting that we need further legal advice on this, on whether or not we can do that. Right?
Yeah, I think we need legal advice, and we need language in here that says that we approve cumulative voting in case proportional representation comes under court challenge or legal challenge, which it could. We just need a fallback position.
Okay, now, there are 2 issues here. One has to do with the diversity goals and the diversity requirements, and the other one has to do with the nature of the voting, proportional voting and not. So can we separate those 2 out? Right.
Yeah.
So is there any problem with the approach toward, that we would go for the proportional representation pending the legal? You don't want to speak to that first?
On the mic, please. On the mic,
I just
please.
Think there's probably agreement on that. That's why.
Well, I don't know if what we're proposing.
No, the mic, we're not here.
Okay, folks, just calm down. It's okay. All right, Donna, we'll do it the other way around. Okay, we'll go on the diversity issues first.
Just to continue where I left off before, as I said, the nomination process would be as before. There would be seats set aside for constituencies, but all voters would take part in choosing who of the constituency candidates for each seat would fill that seat. What this means is there would be 1 election. All members would vote at the same time. The ballot would contain 14 boxes, 1 for each mission constituency and 1 for the at-large constituency. Oh, and I guess if there were going to be geographic constituencies, then it would be more than 14. That was my own personal view that those should be eliminated, but just skip that part. Each listener may vote in all of the constituencies. For the mission constituencies in which there is more than 1 seat and more candidates than there are seats, voters can indicate their first and second choice, and the instant runoff method would be used to determine the winners. In the at-large category, if there are more nominees than seats, voters would rank their preferences, and the single transferable vote method of proportional representation would be used to determine the winners. So the single transferable vote method would not be used for all of the candidates because of the set-aside seats. That's just what I wanted you to understand. Is that clear? Where there's in the at-large seats, there are a bunch of seats, and you would do it that way. But in the constituency seats, you wouldn't do it that way because people have to vote within each one, or don't have to. They may vote within each one of the constituencies.
But within that, there would not be proportional voting within that.
Wouldn't work if you don't have at least five seats.
If there's 1 seat. And there are a number of nominees, No, it's only when you have multiple seats and there are more candidates than there are seats that you use that method, isn't it?
Is that right, David? Okay. Okay. So are people... I must have zoned out for a second. I'm sorry.
Okay.
It's not clear to me. It's not clear to me what the proposal is.
Oh, what the proposal... What I'm proposing.
Right.
I'm proposing
that the ballot contain individual boxes for the constituencies and for the at-large category and the geographic, if they're included. And that the candidates for each one of those categories are listed in that box. And then the voters have the opportunity to vote within each one of these boxes.
Okay, so people are placed on the ballot by constituency.
Correct.
But people vote in whatever, for whatever
right.
for person
they vote
want.
In as many of these, they make as many of these choices as they want to.
Right.
Right, but
you don't only vote in your constituency. You can vote
right.
for anybody.
You can vote in any one of the constituencies.
Right. Vote in all of them?
You can
as
vote in all of them. Yes,
the
you
right
can vote in
for.
All of them.
As many
no,
as wait, a minute,
as
wait a minute.
Yeah.
There are 14 constituencies plus an at-large. Is that correct?
Let's say that's what the number is.
Let's work with
give
that.
Give me the geographic.
Yeah,
okay.
All right, so I have 15 votes. Is that correct?
Correct.
One in each of the 14 constituencies and one in the at-large category?
No, that's not correct, because in the at-large category, you have one vote in the sense that...
In the proportional representation,
yes.
I vote once.
But you indicate your preferences.
Yes, all right.
Okay.
But in each of the constituency models, constituency groups, I vote for which Latino I prefer.
Right.
Which... Native American I prefer, which African American I prefer,
right.
on a regular simple vote of whoever gets the most votes wins.
The only case that wouldn't be the case is if there's more than one seat and more candidates than there are seats, I think.
So if there were in, let's say, in the Middle East category,
yeah.
if there were 5 seats available, I mean, how would we know how many seats are available?
It's outlined in the proposal itself. The unity proposal designates the certain numbers of seats for certain constituencies.
Okay, so let's say there are 3 seats available and 5 people running.
Right.
For the Middle Eastern seats.
Right.
Right. Then in that case, would the proportional representation voting work?
That, yes.
Okay. And if there was 2 seats available and 2 people running, then no.
It was win.
Then it wouldn't be applicable.
Right. And
top
if there,
2 vocators would get seated.
Right. The top. No. Okay. If there were 2 people. No. It would still be. If there were 2 seats.
And 2 people
no,
running.
Whatever the number of seats are, if there are more than that running, then you could use proportional voting.
Use cumulative.
Right?
Also.
Or the cumulative, either one.
Yeah.
Right? It's only as if you have the exact same number or less.
And they all win.
But then it's not really much of an election.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
How do you decide?
So, yes, you would have
pardon
the
me.
Proportional voting.
Pardon me.
What?
Pardon me.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
How do you decide what groups deserve your special categorization?
I am not going to answer that question. I'm going to defer that question.
Folks, I'm not taking this lineup business. Sit down.
I
would like you to raise your hand and I'll call on you.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. The lining up stuff, it really throws the whole conversation off. Don, if you're done talking, if you could go sit down, that'd be great. Okay. Bob.
Okay.
Let's see.
Bob Lederer. Bob Lederer from the WBAI Unity Caucus. I wanted to announce that after a lot of reflection and consultation with people around the network, the Unity Caucus has decided in order to move this process forward that we will stand behind Donna Gould's hybrid proposal and we will, you know, move forward with the idea of allowing there to be, and it's very simple, I know it seems complicated, but her proposal boils down to something quite simple, which is to add to, in the phrase that Carol used, add to the reasonable methods for selecting delegates in these bylaws that a local, the outgoing local advisory boards could choose by whatever vote you recommend. We suggested the bar should be high at 2/3 vote. Could choose as one of those methods designating particular seats on the new local station boards to be there in order to assure a representation and presence for particular communities in the listener area that that relate to the mission of Pacifica, and that the method used in that those would have to be elected seats, and that could use, as was just being discussed, if there were multiple seats, it would use proportional representation. If there were single seats, we would recommend that the mandate at least be for instant runoff voting, which seems to be a little bit more clear indication of people, of the voters' sentiment, so that someone doesn't get in with, if there's five candidates, you can't win with 23% of the vote. You'd have to get you'd have to get a majority based on your second choices and third choices and fourth choices being taken into account. But in any case, this would be listed there, and this goes back then to the earlier section about the size of the board. This would be tied to the option of an outgoing local advisory board to add seats for that purpose up to a maximum of 36 in multiples of four to maintain the 1/4 staff. And that we will also want to say that we still stand by our political position that self-determination of communities within Pacifica is always the preferable way to go, and this is not our first choice to allow the entire listenership to have a say in what a particular oppressed group or who a particular oppressed group decides to represent them on this board. So this is a compromise. It is not something we'd prefer, but and we hope at the bylaws convention in whenever that is, 2 to 3 years, that proposal can still be given consideration. But we are willing to move forward with this idea, which I think satisfies a lot of the concerns about the electorate not having an overall chance to vote for all the seats.
Okay, James and then Carol.
I'm kind of curious about who created the designations that you're talking about, Bob, and also how were the categories weighed?
I'm sorry, the last question again?
How were the categories? You have various, groups. I guess I'm going to classify those as categories. How were they weighed?
You mean how many votes do they get?
Yes.
How many seats do they get?
How many seats are they getting?
Okay. As far as the way that this list... actually, someone can loan me their list. I don't have it in front of me, but it was basically, if I recall, it was African ancestry, Latino, Asian, Arab and Muslim, Native American, and then groups based on other forms of oppression in society, including women, lesbians, gay men, bisexuals, transgendered as one category, people with disabilities, prisoners, immigrants, youth and artists, I hope I didn't leave any out, as well as the geographic sub-areas of the listener area, which may not be adequately represented on the air. The way we came up with those categories was simply by looking at the trends of forms of oppression and forms of community organization over the past 30 years in the United States. And over again, these are the categories that come up where we look at recent history and recent Pacifica coverage. Thank you. The coverage that Pacifica has given to the problems, the concerns, and the forms of organization are primarily in those categories of types of communities. Very important, rank-and-file labor and unemployed workers. Obviously, the issue of class is a critical one. So they're not arbitrary, and they're not kind of taking one single country and saying that country should have a seat on the board, but it's basically taking the continents or the major ranges in the world of people who have immigrated or been forced, in the case of African ancestry people, through slavery to come to this country and dealing with their experience, having a voice for that, a guaranteed seat on the board.
You never answered my question.
I'm sorry.
I said, who created the description of
designation? The WBAI Unity Caucus.
Okay. Who's on the Unity Caucus?
The WBAI Unity Caucus is a group of listeners and staff members at WBAI that has existed for about 6 months, that has ranged at some of our meetings up to about 50 people, but also includes a lot of people we've consulted with throughout the listener area from all of these constituencies, as well as people who aren't in any of the oppressed constituencies, but people who are allies of those constituencies in trying to have their voice heard at Pacifica. And, you know, we've engaged in a lot of consultation with many different types of people. And as I said, this comes out of a lot of history, too, where we looked at what's been covered at WBAI on the air, what kind of programs exist for particular communities and at other Pacifica stations.
How are you defining African descent?
Well, maybe I defer to one of our African ancestry members of the group who are here today.
I did.
And what's the question again?
How are you defining African descent?
How are we defining African descent? Okay, people of African descent are anybody who claims African ancestry, okay, within the African diaspora. And that could be Afro-Europeans, African Caribbeans, Africans in the Americas from Canada to Uruguay, African Colombians, Brazilians, Hondurans, Costa Ricans, Cubans, Puerto Ricans, African descent, okay? African Americans, African Canadians. Those are people of African descent. Within the context of the USA, you know, you have many African, in New York City, you have many African ethnic groups. That's why we use the term African ancestry as opposed to African American. Everything from all of the migrant African ethnic groups, which range the entire continent, to Haitians, to Jamaicans in the Caribbean, etc. All these constitute African ancestry.
Well, I would argue that from a surface perspective, that's fine, but I have quite a few friends who are of African descent who are phenotypically white as most white folks here.
That's not the issue here.
And the point I'm making is that if you're talking about diversity...
You're not talking about phenotype, brother.
Well, in so many ways you are.
No, we're not.
In so many ways you are.
Okay, in your opinion.
Okay, wait, folks.
It's just a different philosophy.
Let me finish my thought. Let me say.
You're cutting into my thought.
What I want to say is that James needs to finish his complete thought. If there is a brief response, then we'll get the brief response. But let him finish.
Yeah. My concern is, one, who was or who, in terms of aggregate, created this list? And be very clear about what you mean by African descent, because you went through a great litany of names, but in terms of actual African descent, I have some issues.
You're good.
Okay, so that's my concern, and nobody's really addressed that to me yet.
Nobody's addressed what specifically?
I think, as I said, who created the designations?
Who was
on the board?
Bob Lederer just went through a whole litany, as you
say. You said 50 people, right?
No, he said the Unity Caucus. And
it's
the Unity
50 people.
Yeah, it's a number of people who have been engaged in the process for a number of months, who have been historical BAI, Pacifica listeners, supporters, staff members, activists who have been involved in organizing for many years, and members of constituency communities. Many of the communities, plus those not listed, were engaged in continuous dialogue and discussion, came to meetings of combination bylaws, Unity Caucus discussions around these specific issues, and this is how the list was created, by evaluating Pacifica BAI's historical focus, etc., by looking at the historically oppressed communities, historically marginalized, disenfranchised communities. That's how the list was created.
Were the disenfranchised class abused communities represented on this Unity board?
Yes. You're looking at one.
Okay. I guess that's what my question is. And that's where that's what I'm addressing.
We have Asians, we have Latinos, we have lesbians and gays on the
I understand,
caucus.
But do they actually represent
labor,
the communities?
We have unorganized workers. All those are represented in the Unity Caucus.
Then I have no problems with the issue.
Right.
If, in fact, they were, in fact, represented by representatives from each of those communities.
Yes, okay. We have them.
And then how do you decide how many seats to give folks in each group?
Okay.
Would somebody answer that question?
We came up with a formula that was based on New York City, and you know, as you know, we had compromised in September that these could be decided separately by each station, but based on that all of these that we listed would be one seat, except for African ancestry and Latino, would be two seats based on their large proportion in the New York City metro area. But the exact numbers, I mean, all of this could be discussed later at the local advisory board meeting as far as the exact numbers. But the concept that seats could be set aside for this purpose, I think, is what we're suggesting.
The reason why
last phrase. Or the board could choose to limit them in some way. The board could decide anything you want, that categories can only be, or seats can only be created if there is one for each group, or that there can be no more than two, or that the grand total, as we proposed in our latest draft, be no more than 50% of these set-aside seats. So the board can put all the restrictions it wants to make sure that its sense of fairness is satisfied. Mm-hmm. We're not wedded to numbers. We're wedded to the concept of guaranteed seats at the table of decision-making for communities that have a passionate interest in what Pacifica does.
Okay. Folks, this is what I want to suggest. I have six hands up.